You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we are coming to you live from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
Which for this podcast will be known as Dog's House.
That's a good way to put it.
That is where we're coming from. And we have a toast is in order.
Actually, I was going to say Martin Stadium is going to be known as Dog's House.
Oh, it has been for a while. A toast is in order. We've got our purple Winter Jubilee Rainiers here. And to winning the Pac-12 North.
To winning the Apple Cup first off, and then to winning the Pac-12 North in that order. It's a great day for Husky football.
Oh, one of the best days for Husky football probably since 2001. Maybe excluding the day that Chris Peterson was hired.
I was going to say, that's like the competition at this point is that day. Because you can draw a direct line from Chris Peterson's hire to the Huskies getting back on top in the Pac-12 North. I guess not back on, because the Pac-12 North didn't exist the last time they were on top.
Okay, so step one is done now, right?
Yes.
Step one that you're looking for, this is the Husky rankings. Number one is win the Pac-12 North.
Well, step one is get to a bowl game.
Okay, get to a bowl
eligibility.
Bowl game.
Managed that a long time ago.
Pac-12 North. Winning the Pac-12, then the other thing.
Continuing play after that.
Further football.
Pursuing a national championship.
Stuff which we can't even talk about right now.
Way too early. Way too soon. That's been a running joke this season. In the Stanford game and in the Oregon game, I kept talking about how much time there was left, even when the Huskies were up multiple touchdowns early in those games. Had to bring that back today.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of time left always.
not always. But at the end of the game, there was not a lot of time left.
So let's start from the beginning. What were you feeling on the first drive of the game, starting with the Huskies receiving the opening kickoff and then the first drive?
So I know you were unhappy about the Cougs winning the toss and deferring and the Huskies starting with the football. I mean, that's usually a bad omen for the Seahawks. I don't feel like it's got the same power for the Huskies. It's the same kind of concern.
Partially, the Huskies can play offense in the first half, unlike the Seahawks.
That's a key difference. And they came out and just moved the ball down the field, and it was a preview of what was to come all day long, although there did not end up being a lot more Dante Pettis 50-yard completion.
They tried. Close.
Yeah.
Close. So when the Huskies score on that first drive, I'm thinking, okay, they're going to give up points, right? Mm-hmm. We know that Wazoo is going to score.
You expected a high-scoring game. You were asking what the total was on this game after that.
And then Wazoo comes out and looks okay, but fumbles the ball almost immediately after.
Yeah, they were moving the football a little bit and in a disconcerting way, but then the fumble gives the Huskies the ball at midfield.
Followed by a long sequence of them in the red zone, and then a third and goal from the 18, Jake Browning to Dante Pettis.
Getting up two touchdowns early, you effectively nullify the fact that you got the ball first. Like, you know, if you assume that everyone's going to score in every possession, which they aren't, but, you know, you give yourself a little bit of a margin for error there.
And then Wazoo hit a field goal.
They did.
Very nice. Hey, kicking 2-for-2 in the game. Right?
We didn't expect it to be that good.
If you would have guessed that the kickers would have been 100% for the game, you would have maybe guessed that neither kicker kicked the ball.
Yes.
That there were no field goals attempted. Huskies come down 28-3 at the end of the first quarter. And that's the point where you're starting to say a lot of game left.
Yes. Because you know that Wazoo is going to get it together offensively, and they did. Although I think what really stood out about the UW defense in this game is the fact that they took away that quick strike ability. They forced Wazoo to go the long way down the field. You know, when they did score, it was converting on fourth down. It was slowly matriculating the ball down the field to pay homage to a Cougar legend, the late Keith Jackson. And that was a very effective strategy when you start up 28-3.
Yeah.
And it's always an effective strategy.
I wish the Huskies could start out 28-3 every game.
But particularly when the Cougars, so that third quarter, you know, it started to feel a little worrisome. They score on their first drive. Huskies go 3-and-out. They march the ball downfield, have a chance to get at that point within, let's see, it would have been 35-24, I guess, had they scored on that drive. But still, they had basically taken up the entire third quarter with those two drives. And, you know, it was a little worrisome, but as you pointed out, the Huskies were still in pretty good shape.
Yes. I mean, so they have the great drive right after that, right? But before we talk about that, I want to look in the second quarter, because I think something huge happened that would continue through the rest of the game, and that is goal line stops.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you look at two of the biggest sequences in this game is Wazoo driving the ball, looking like an imminent touch, like their score is imminent, and the Huskies coming up stout on that defensive line. I think a really terrific day for that front four.
It's such a Seahawks situation, right?
Yes.
Where most colleges, when you watch them and their opponent gets the ball within the five, you assume that they're going to score.
Yeah.
But for this Husky team, that's not the case all of a sudden, right? They're an defend every blade of grass team.
I mean, understandably, they would probably... there's a lot of commonality between the Seahawks and Huskies philosophies. Some differences as well. But that's something you share. It's not just, you know, it's one thing to say defend every blade of grass and, you know, for LaVon Coleman to make the saving tackle that he had on the long punt return. But it's another to back it up with the goal line stand and have the ability to do that.
To actually defend every blade of grass.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can defend every blade of grass, but still be unsuccessful.
Yes. Like, to being good at it.
Yeah.
So that stop that we were talking about, this happened in the second quarter, right? I think this was after a long punt return. And it looks like Wazoo is going in for a touchdown that would have made the game, I think, 28-10. And yes. There's LaVon Coleman coming, not giving up pursuit on the play, right? He had two big special teams in this game.
Also had a block in the back. It was a very eventful special teams game for LaVon Coleman.
Oh, did he have that block in the back?
His two touchdowns that he scored
on top of being the best running back on the field, LaVon Coleman was one of the better special teams players on the field.
He was a busy guy. No two ways about it.
But so he makes that play, and then the Huskies have a goal line stop. Eventually, Wazoo comes down and scores because of the John Ross fumble. But seeing that happen sets the tone for what the Huskies are going to do in the red zone.
And then the other thing that set the tone there was when Wazoo did score that touchdown, Huskies respond with a 7-play, 85-yard drive for a touchdown of their own to push the lead back to 25. And other than that one time when they got stopped on third down, I think that's what we generally saw when they came up very close to picking up third down, third and short, but were forced to punt.
And that was their only punt of the game?
I believe so. Or they did punt eventually during the fourth quarter.
Okay.
Yeah. When they were essentially running out the clock at that point. So what we saw was, you know, okay, you're going to give up some points, but you just got to be able to respond and bounce back from that. And I think that's what separated this from, you know, there was a lot of allusions during this game to the 2012 Apple Cup, the last time the Cougars won, when they also overcame an 18-point deficit within the fourth quarter. But the big difference is that UW team, Keith Price was struggling, the offensive line was a bit of a mess. They didn't have the ability to put together these kind of drives to put the game away.
Yeah, and the most important drive of the game came at the beginning of the fourth quarter, right?
So after another goal, the second goal line stand.
The score is 35-17. You're not as terrified because of the goal line stand, but again, you're giving them the ball, or the Huskies are starting with the ball at the two-yard line, right?
Yep.
I think there was a short run for Miles, which got them a little bit of space. They eventually get a long play from John Ross to about midfield. And then LaVon Coleman takes over.
That one was not the John Ross play. That was the Chico McClatcher had a 14-yard conversion on third and two to pick that one up.
Didn't Ross have a long play on that series?
No.
But when
Aaron Fuller had the big catch.
When they get into Wazoo territory, it is LaVon Coleman time. And that is why LaVon Coleman needs to be on the field. I mean, you look back to that USC game, you're like, why does LaVon Coleman not carry the ball more? Thunder and lightning. Looking at what he does, plays that. So on that series, there was a play where it looked like LaVon Coleman was completely stuffed, right?
Yes.
There are six Wazoo defenders in the area. There's nothing there. And then all of a sudden, LaVon Coleman just keeps his legs churning and picks up a first down on the play, an extra 7 or 8 yards that should not have been there.
So Gaskin ended up getting 16 carries to LaVon Coleman's 10, but LaVon Coleman, it seemed like, you know, the bulk of the usage in the second half, and again, the more effective of the two UW running backs. Gaskin goes 16 carries for 50 yards, Coleman 10 for 82.
He is unbelievable, LaVon Coleman right now. I mean, so you have the hot take, right, which is that Matisse Thybulle had better NBA, it was a better NBA prospect than DeJounte Murray.
Would have a better NBA career.
Okay, my hot take, and you probably agree with this hot take, is that LaVon Coleman will have the best NFL career of any Husky offensive player currently on the team.
No, I don't agree with that. That's way too hot.
That's too hot?
That is too hot a take. I think it's John Ross. I'm going to go with that guy.
Oh, it's. I mean, John Ross is exciting. John Ross has a lot going for him. But LeVon Coleman, imagine him as an NFL running back. He can't be tackled. He's shifty. He's fast. He can do everything. And he plays special teams.
I don't want to get too into the weeds on this one. Those guys in the NFL tackle a lot better than the guys in college do. That's another hot. That's my hot take.
LeVon Coleman is really good.
Yes, and should be, I think, at least in an equal time share with Myles Gaskin, if not getting the bulk of the playing time going forward.
Okay, so then what about defensively? Some things that stood out to me for the matchup is Wazoo with their least amount of first downs for any game on the season.
Really?
With 18.
I saw there was Luke Falk's, they showed on the broadcast on FS1 that it was his lowest passing yardage total in a first half. I think maybe this season, but I guess ever would include games where he was injured, so it must be this season.
As a team, their second lowest rushing total in the Pac-12.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the
passing total in the Pac-12.
We talked about that they were a dangerous team running the football, and that did not show up in this game, where they, partially because of the number of goal line runs, but they averaged 2.7 yards per carry in this game. Jamal Moore was really the only guy who was effective for them on the ground, and he only had 3 carries.
Was there anybody who stood out in particular from the Husky defense?
I mean, really, it was in many ways a team effort, I would say. One surprise here was that Sidney Jones didn't have his best game. This one is not the one he's going to want on the when the NFL scouts are evaluating him. He's not going to want his matchup with Gabe Marks on there highlighted. But Taylor Rapp.
I was going to go with Taylor Rapp. I was going to go with Taylor Rapp and not Sidney Jones, but okay.
Well, I was just going to start listing guys off.
Okay, Taylor Rapp.
I mean, I think, you know, like we talked about, the entire defensive line made big plays in those goal line situations. You saw better pressure in this game. You know, at times, Falk had, you know, the ability to survey the pocket and really move around and find guys. But at other times, the Huskies did a nice job bringing pressure. I mean, Buda Baker always, I think, is going to be on this list. Comes up with the crucial interception. You know, I think, you could point to a bunch of guys. And Ben Burke-Hervin, I thought, had a really nice game.
There are a lot of guys, and a lot of guys who are going to be around for an extended period of time.
Burke-Hervin was on the field a lot because we didn't see Kashawn Bieri at all in the second half after he played quite well, I thought, in the first half. So that's a little bit of a concern until we find out exactly what's going on there.
I'm looking up who this defensive lineman's name is. Who is that dude? What is his name?
Greg Gaines? Elijah Qualls?
The other dude, who I don't know that well.
Oh, Damian Turpin.
Damian Turpin. Man, Damian Turpin making things happen for maybe the first time all season.
Yeah, he's gotten into the rotation, I think, a little bit more in the second half of the season and has provided some effective moments, had the sack in this game.
I thought that was huge, the D-line playing that well. Is there anything, especially defensively, that you'd maybe be nervous about going forward in the next two games that the Huskies will be guaranteed to play?
Well, we'll have to see what happens here with Bieria. You know, obviously, at some point, you hope to get Joe Mathis back for a postseason game beyond the Pac-12 championship. He's not going to be back next week, so it's again going to be incumbent on, you know, Coach K and the entire defensive staff of doing a nice job of mixing up the pressure that they bring and creating some heat there, because of the fact you're probably not going to get it playing straight up at this point with the defensive line the way it is.
That's still the biggest takeaway for me, is that they did end up getting some pressure on Falk in the game, but once Luke Falk settled in the third quarter, he had enough time and was able to find open receivers. It's something where, okay, let's say that you're playing Colorado next week, might be okay, but playing against Sam Darnold, that's not going to happen.
But even so, as we talked about, you know, you just went through how relatively ineffective this game was for the Wazoo offense. Falk threw 50 times in this game for 269 yards. That's 5.4 yards per attempt. That would be the worst in the Pac-12.
Nice. No, and we talked about this on the... I was actually kind of surprised to hear about this when we talked about it on the preview podcast, which is how low Luke Falk's yards per attempt is. It's insane.
It's a lot of underneath throws. They're not really a big play team, people think of them as a quick strike team.
Yeah, when you hear the broadcast saying that points come in bunches, it's like, I don't think that's true, actually.
I will say, if we are talking about concerns, one thing they did have... First off, the Cougars receiving core, and this is something, again, we previewed, is a possibility without River Craycraft. They had some drops. They had some serious drops. And they also had a couple of plays where they did get long. You know, they did get past the safeties and couldn't connect on any of them. Or if they the one they did hit, you know, basically the guy was catching it off balance and went down on his own accord when it could have been a much bigger play had he been able to stay on his feet.
Yeah, there are a couple of moments that Wazoo had where it could have been a closer game.
Yeah, but then you ultimately look at the difference on the team stats, you know, the yards per play differential, things like that. Huskies outgained them 510 to 334. Like, this game wasn't close.
No. Okay, so the Huskies have won the Pac-12 North. We feel great. Everything is good. But then 1 week from now, I guess 1 week and a day.
Yeah. No, 1 week. It is Friday night.
Oh, it's Friday night?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. 1 week from today, two consecutive Fridays, the Huskies have to follow it up again. So tell us now, both in the Pac-12, let's start with the Pac-12. What are we cheering for?
Well, I mean, that's your choice. That's each individual choice.
But what should we be
cheering for? So the scenarios, as we lay them out, it all depends on what happens with the Colorado game tomorrow hosting Utah. If Colorado wins, they win the Pac-12 South. They're in. Utah, because they lost to Oregon last week, has now been eliminated. So if Utah pulls the upset at Colorado, then USC ends up in the Pac-12 championship game in a rematch of the Huskies' lone loss this season. So I think the number one thing we're rooting for, USC beating Notre Dame.
Okay.
Because the worst case scenario this weekend is a three-loss USC team ends up being the opponent from the Pac-12 South. Because we know how good this USC team is, but they won't look very good to, you know, the College Football Playoff Committee, basically everyone who's watching this, if they're a three-loss team.
Okay. So number one is USC winning. That's the one thing we can all objectively agree on.
Yeah, and then so now it comes down to, do you want another shot at USC? Do you want a chance to avenge that loss? Or do you want to face a Colorado team that, quite frankly, is not playing as well right now as USC, because almost no one in the country is playing as well as USC at this
point. We're cheering for Colorado as number two.
We have agreed to cheer for Colorado. That makes more sense.
I don't want anything to... We've seen what USC could do. Especially we saw USC in our house.
Right.
We don't want to see them on a neutral field.
I feel like UW is a little better equipped to deal with USC the second time around. But I still would probably rather, and it'd be more interesting, we haven't seen Colorado yet. So that's, yeah. You know, there's only two teams that Huskies did not face in the Pac-12 South, Colorado and UCLA. So the opportunity to face one of those teams is kind of intriguing.
Yeah, I'm just curious to see what Colorado has.
I mean,
it has nothing to do with USC. They're not terrifying at all.
All right, so elsewhere around the country.
And then nationally, if we're talking college football playoff, the Huskies are sitting at number five right now.
Yeah, so I think the most important game to the Huskies, I mean, obviously, it's Michigan-Ohio State. Two of the four teams ahead of them in the college football playoff rankings are playing each other. One of those teams will suffer a second loss. But things get really complicated if Ohio State wins that game. Because what that means is, if Penn State beats Michigan State tomorrow, Penn State wins that, I believe it's the Big Ten East, and would go to the Big Ten playoff game. Ohio State's season would be done with that one loss. At that point, I think they're basically locked into the playoff. And then you've got an opportunity for, if Penn State would then play Wisconsin, I believe now has clinched, because it looks like Nebraska is going to lose to Iowa as we currently record this. And they have lost 40-10. So Wisconsin will, if they win tomorrow, if you've got a one-loss Wisconsin against a two-loss Wisconsin against a two-loss Penn State?
Yes.
Okay. If one of those teams wins the Big Ten, could they jump UW and be that fourth team in the playoffs? That's, I think, the big concern that you have about, you know, the way this could play out.
Is there anything to pay attention to for Alabama or Clemson?
I mean, you know, I think Alabama at this point, they'd have to lose twice.
They'd have to lose the next two to be out.
Yeah, it's hard for me to envision them not getting in, no matter what, at this point. Clemson does not have that probably same margin for error, but you'd be pretty surprised if anything went wrong for them hosting South Carolina tomorrow. 6-5 South Carolina team. They are favored by 24.5 in that one. So I don't like their chances.
Go South Carolina.
If Clemson is going to lose, it would inevitably, I think, happen in the ACC championship game.
To most likely Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're thinking right now, let's say that the Huskies win. What it comes down to is whether the committee wants to put two Big Ten teams in, or put in a two-loss Big Ten team,
yes,
or put in a one-loss Husky team.
And I think that would probably end up favoring UW, is my suspicion, but I don't want to find out.
Okay, so go Michigan.
It's just a lot easier. It's a lot simpler if Michigan wins tomorrow.
Okay, what about this scenario?
Okay.
Michigan wins and then loses to Penn State.
In that case, I think UW is in over all of the,
every single team.
I mean, Penn State might jump the Huskies in that scenario, but
they go
no way...
over any Big Ten team.
I mean, maybe Penn State jumps them because they've got such a great win at that point. Or not Penn State. That would be Wisconsin. I'm sorry.
Okay.
That scenario. Because Penn State only makes the championship game if Ohio State wins.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So at that point, I think Wisconsin probably would jump UW because they just have a much better win on their resume than UW would. But it wouldn't really matter. It'd be UW versus Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, any other Rutgers. Oh, just anyone else from the Big Ten.
No, UW would be the four.
I think probably, yeah.
And they'd play Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most likely scenario, if the Huskies are to make the playoff.
Whatever, play Alabama, who cares?
That's a long ways down the road.
It's a long way away, and let's just get there.
Virginia Tech does still have to win tomorrow, it appears, to clinch the Coastal. I don't know. It depends on the tiebreaker. So a lot of teams could get to 5-3 in the Coastal.
So a great day in Husky history, winning their first ever Pac-12 North.
Yes.
And we'll be back
There's
next week.
There's so many
week.
Years where we desired to win the Pac-12 North.
All those years. It's basically the Northwest Championship.
The closest thing to a Northwest Championship.
We invented the Pac-12 North. And we'll be back next week to preview next Friday night, UW versus question mark.
Yeah, we'll know a lot more about that team opponent by that point. We will also have our usual coverage of the Seahawks facing Tampa Bay on Sunday. And previewing, looking ahead to Carolina on Sunday Night Football. And then a little bit on the Huskies weekend in Las Vegas. You can catch those games. We weren't clear on how they were being broadcast. It appears now they are the Husky basketball games tonight and on Saturday are being broadcast on campusinsiders.com for those of you who are interested.
Okay.
Also, I'm interested. It appears campusinsiders.com is a website that exists. So those are both things I learned today.
Great news.
On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.